the character that Jodie Foster plays, they warn her, you know, don't let him get into your head. And I think when we wrote about Jorik Walter, we said to ourselves, what if he gets into people's head? Maybe that's what he does.
It's more interesting.
So yes, and in Sweden, many years ago, the Finnish people there weren't very well looked upon by Swedes. And we tried to change that by creating a Finnish hero in our books. And
so probably the first Finnish hero in Swedish crime fiction anyway.
They exist in kind of another Stockholm, but at the same time as we do.
No niin, tervetuloa Neuvottele-kanavalle. And I'll switch to English. Welcome to the Negotiator channel. And I have from Sweden, Lars Kepler. Welcome.
Thank you.
I met with you when our pride and joy, Maxique, was interviewing you. And you gave me your newest book, The Spider, Hämähäkki. And you signed it as Lars Kepler, but twice. Why wouldn't one of you sign Lars and one Kepler? Well, can you tell me about this? Who is this Lars Kepler?
Well, Lars Kepler is our pen name. Yeah. So he is kind of what we are when we write these books together. Mm. It's the way for our cooperation.
And we needed a new writer when we started. So we were married for many years and we were writers individually, but we really, really wanted to write together. And it was impossible. We just started to fight. So we had to create a new writer. And I said, his name is Kepler. And you said his first name is Lars. So actually, she's Lars and I Kepler. And we tried from start to sign like that. Just wrote Lars and I Kepler. But then
This feels right. If you look underneath each of our signatures, there's a little kind of sign. And it's the symbol of Alexander and Alexandra. So we are there, the little line underneath.
Yeah, so we're both Lars Kepler and ourselves. Yeah.
And I'm trying to act as one host here. I have my investment banking colleague Axel Gotthard with us, and you are a how would you say alpha male in Swedish?
yeah, we talked about this with Sami. I think the word you're looking for is alpha hane.
Yes. Yeah, and Axel is from the Swedish-speaking Finnish community, which is kind of a strong community in its own right, but it's a kind of elitist, but that's not what happens for Finns in Sweden. And you have a very interesting character, Joona Linna, who's a Finn who lives in Sweden, but he's not Finnjävel. He's a strong, what was the word?
Alfahane.
Alfahane. Is that true?
No. No, it's not. Actually, Joona Linna, absolutely. He's our main character from the beginning of the books. But in The Spider, he is becoming more and more tired and scarred of everything that has happened to him in every book. For us, it's very important that he is a complex character.
Yeah, he's absolutely human.
He's alive. Yeah. Yeah.
But of course, he's a hero. In that case, he's also a kind of an underdog from start to us, because he comes from a Finnish family and lives in Sweden, so it's a minority.
Yes, and in Sweden, many years ago, the Finnish people there weren't very well looked upon by Swedes, and we tried to change that by creating a Finnish hero in our books. And
so probably the first Finnish hero in Swedish crime fiction anyway.
That's true, and I like him and his journey to the dark side. And Max Ek, I'll insert here the clip from yesterday where he made the audience laugh.
I remember you saying something like that, you appreciate the Finnish people.
Absolutely, and it was so good to create, also to have a hero, a Finnish hero in Swedish literature, because I feel that Sweden has been like oppressive towards Finland all the time, and you have to learn Swedish in school. That's insane. It's not fair.
Alexandra said that this is kind of a nod for the Swedish oppression to Finns. But it's good. But all of your characters are kind of psychologically complex. Then you have Saga Bauer, which kind of conjures the Lisbeth Salander to me, but much more beautiful, but maybe less brainy. Is that fair?
Well, she had this really sad childhood. Her mother was mentally ill and lied to her about her life's story. And Saga, I think she might be bipolar. We don't know our heroes completely. That's why we love to write about them, because then we meet them.
And yeah, we explore them.
Yeah.
But, well, she's also very complex, as I say. She's really smart, but since she has this side she doesn't understand about herself, she makes mistakes all the time. She's had this awful temper, and
She has this lack of impulse control in a way, and that drives her into some mistakes, but it also makes her maybe a much better police in a way. She doesn't have any filters.
And then the other two characters, Axel, maybe you could ask about this, the psychologist and then the one of the antagonists.
Yes, I actually wanted to ask one thing about Joona Linna still, because maybe you're familiar with the, I think I read somewhere in an article that maybe Joona Linna was inspired by the Finnish author Väinö Linna.
Oh, yes.
And one of his characters in The Unknown Soldier or Tuntematon Sotilas in Finnish, who's called Rokka. Is there any truth to this?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true.
It was a great inspiration.
Yeah.
And of course, Väinö Linna, he writes totally different books, but we love his books, and we really love the Rokka. So, but when you write, you use everything, your memories, your dreams, things you have experienced.
We didn't try to, you know, copy Rokka, but we just felt like they are related in our minds in some way.
Sure.
Yeah. They have the same spirit in a way.
Yeah, he would be very useful if there's ever a Russian attack in Finland.
Yeah.
But now we're joining NATO together, so we get a bit of a respite on that. But the hypnotist, how did you feel, Axel? What was his character to you, or Jurek Walter?
Well, I mean, the hypnotist, I have to admit, it was a while back since I read The Hypnotist, but he was also quite a complex character, as you described Saga. But Jurek Walter, he immediately brought to my mind at least Hannibal Lecter. Is this did you ever draw any parallels to Hannibal Lecter?
Well, we have heard it before.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and I, one thing, when we saw The Silence of the Lambs, the character that Jodie Foster plays, they warn her, you know, don't let him get into your head. And I think when we wrote about Jurek Walter, we said to ourselves, what if he gets into people's head? Maybe that's what he does.
It's more interesting.
Yeah, because we felt that it never really happened in The Silence of the Lambs. So we wanted to take this idea one step further. And then we started to study real serial killers and do a lot of research about them. But actually, that research was so depressing because they are so lonely. They don't have any love in their lives. And it's just... it wasn't the material for our serial killer in a way.
It was interesting and we learned a lot, but we took some with us and we interlaced that with our own like deepest fears when we created Jurek Walter, because he's totally merciless and he take advantage of everything you say and turn it to a lie, which
so he's
suit
kind of,
you perfectly. So it's
he
like
corrupts you and he gets into everything.
I think we were
so afraid
and I think that's really well conveyed in the books as well, because I feel like he's a really scary character, but unlike many other parts of your books, I don't feel like I see him. I think he's just in my head. So he's a very scary character. And
He's a monster in the labyrinth inside of Wasserwald.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but this research is interesting. You mentioned, I mean, there's this dark triad of psychological profile, which is that you are a psychopath, and then you're Machiavellian, and you're also narcissistic, and then you have all the evil in you. And so, but how much you use actual psychological concepts and profiles in your characters and then the themes?
Well, it comes to the research, so we read a lot, of course,
and we talk to experts.
Yeah.
So we always have these conversations because the book, even if our books are built on fiction and fictive crimes and everything, the police technique and all the medical details the forensics must be authentic. So we always use the current. Science,
research,
in a way.
But then, of course, when you write, you must use yourself. You know, it costs a lot to write a book, and it gives a lot, of course, back. But it costs. You have to use your own feelings, your own fears, your own emotions. So, empathy is probably the most important word for a writer for us, at least to be able to understand. We must understand Ulrich Walter, why he does what he does, and we don't agree, but we must understand, you know, his methods. They are
horrifying,
but we understand why.
So I think for us it's not the concept of a certain mentality, it's more what happened to you. Mm. How did you become like this?
Because the diagnosis is just on the surface anyway. We want to go like under, deeper.
And there's kind of a notch to popular culture and then the science. I feel without going too much in the detail in the spider, there's at least one method of killing is with the acid, so it brings me the Breaking Bad bath scene where they kill dispose of the body with acid, but Jesse Pinkman uses ceramic bath and then it gets through, but you use actual rubber-based plastic or something.
Well, actually, it was because the idea of the spider was actually a true thing that happened to us during the pandemic summer 2020. We were on a road trip with our children.
In the backseat.
And we were driving through the forests of Småland. And one of the children had to pee, so we stopped the car in the woods, and she went out. And then she yelled at us, "Mom and Dad, you must come." And we ran out, and in the ditch on the ground, there was this huge plastic package of bones.
Yeah, blood
remains
bones.
From a body.
So ribs and a spine, which was cut in half, and it was human size. So we called the police, of course. First, we thought, "Wow, what is a, coincidence?
What
level
of
this?"
Yeah, it isn't.
Lars Kepler found
it's so unlikely that we would find a body in
the. But we called the police, and they took it totally seriously. They come immediately.
And then we never heard from them. What was the remains? Was it human or was it an animal? So that started our.
You called back because our daughter was really upset and wanted to know, but we never got any answers. And when a writer have a lack of answers, they start to imagine.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's where this. Sex, we started to imagine a spider that were, spinning a sack.
A web of sack,
around its victims.
Its prey,
And slowly dissolve them with their enzymes.
Okay. Yeah. So no connection
kind
to
of
Breaking Bad. Then.
No.
more a spider.
Yeah, but this interlacing with the real world is also your first book, The Hypnotist. You still remained a sort of enigma or unknown. Who is this guy? And there was a real life hunt for you. How did that go?
Oh, yes. Well, because...
That was crazy.
As I mentioned, to be able to write together, we had to create a new writer. So we created Lars Kepler, and when we had done that, a flood of creativity took over.
Took place, yeah.
Yes, we just loved it to write together. So we wrote the hypnotist.
Yeah, and like, we wanted to protect this creativity among us, because we had had such a hard time to find this key of our cooperation.
So we started. We created a persona of Lars Kepler, but also we decided to keep it a secret, the writer or writers behind Lars Kepler, because...
Yeah, so nobody knew who we were, not even our publishing house. Not
our kids, not our friends.
It was a total secret, but then our manuscript for The Hypnotist was the book of the fair in the London Book Fair, and it was sold to all over the world, and then somebody said, I think it's Henning Mankell.
And Henning Mankell went really upset.
He was so insulted.
I'm already writing crime fiction. Why would I have a pen name?
And then media turned crazy and started a manhunt. They had to find out.
Yeah.
And we were hiding in our little summer house on the West Coast. And it was the book had been published and it was still this hunt.
Yeah, and one of the biggest tabloids in Sweden had this 24 our hotline you could call with tips and
who is Lars Kepler?
Yeah, and they did a profiling, you know, like with which they do on criminals. They did it on live broadcast television in Sweden trying to find out who Lars Kepler is.
Yeah, so we were hiding in our summer house, and it was late in the evening, and we were going to bed, and it was totally dark outside.
Yeah, the kids were asleep already.
And then we saw this flashlight in our garden coming closer and closer to our house. And then we heard this knock on the door, and I said, Alexander, I'm not opening. I'm not opening
the door. So I opened the door, and it was two journalists with cameras and flashlights, and they told us to admit you're Lars Kepler.
Well, at least they didn't shoot you, so yeah. But that's a great story.
How long did you be able to? How long were you able to maintain the anonymity?
Just 6 months.
Yeah. 6 months still.
Half a year. That's all. But actually, it feels very good now to be exposed, because we can be here. We don't have to do our research secretly.
And we didn't know it was going to be a success, you know.
We didn't know if the manuscript would be accepted.
Continue to write and stay secret.
Actually, you did the black edition. Did you find something you were not satisfied with, or what's that about?
No, we just wanted the hypnotist to reflect the Kepler that we write now.
It was a way to celebrate 10 years too. So, and the publishing house wanted to publish it again with a new cover and a new reader for the audiobooks, and we thought, well, let's read through it and make some changes. And when we started, we did a lot.
Yeah, because we changed everything.
As soon as you start,
it's the same story, but it's a bit faster. It moves more direct to things. It's more like the Kepler of today.
Yeah. How much say you? I have a book on negotiation, negotiation power, and I really like the audio actor who reads it, and he's actually the captain in this children's cartoon, and then I like his style. But do you get involved in your translations or with the voice actors, or is that something you want Lars Kepler to be specific in?
Not the translations, no, but in Sweden with our Swedish actor who reads our books, we are very happy with him. We think he reads brilliantly.
Does he change the voice when the different characters come, or
just a little bit?
Just a little bit. Yeah,
very minimalistic.
Yeah, but that's good.
So he's not acting out.
But that's interesting trend. And you have gone international, so you have obviously English. But which other languages you have? And Finnish, of course.
Well, I think we are translated into
60 countries.
Yeah, so I think 60 countries is 40 languages or something.
Yeah. And do you still have the sort of Portuguese roots, or is that what do you?
My mother is from Portugal.
Yeah, but are you able to speak Portuguese or?
A little bit, not very well.
Yeah, this Coelho is interesting. You say Brazilian or the sort of.
Coelho is Portuguese. Yeah,
Portuguese.
It means rabbit.
They're kind of cheesy books in my world, but you don't borrow from that world, like.
Paulo Coelho?
Yeah, yeah.
No, he writes in, he's another person in another part of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But we just have the same last name, and which is the most common name in Portugal, yeah. Coelho.
Ah, okay.
So it's like Svensson in Sweden. So.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's this the sort of psychological. You have the usual stuff, the police department, and then the tensions there, and then you have the psychiatric. Some doctors who are stupid, and some are bad, and then the Saga Bauer suffers from that. Like you said, she might be bipolar, and Joona-Linna is probably also with some kind of a psychological damage. But how well your characters kind of live with that problem of being damaged characters?
Well, as we say, we write in the present tense, so our main characters travel together with us through the present. So we never know about their future. We can plan a story, but we cannot plan our characters. We have to learn as time goes. So, and we don't want them to be like James Bond, who just wipes the dust from his tuxedo when he ends the case. We want them to be scarred.
Mm. They carry with them everything that happened.
Yeah. So each book can be read as a standalone, of course, with a beginning, middle, and end. But if you follow the whole series, it's more like an epic story about Saga and Joona, and we follow them.
And they change throughout the books.
And when you reach the spider, a lot have happened to them. So I think Joona has some post-traumatic
stress syndrome
or problems, of course. He's been through a lot,
but then if we borrow the other Nordic noir crate, Jo Nesbø with his Henry Hall, he drinks a lot, but Joona is not quite the kind of alcoholic, but he has problems with substances.
He has other problems.
He
tries to take care of himself, but in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like so many people, he tries to medicate himself.
Yes, self-medicate.
Mm. Mm. And then about this Nordic noir, there was a goal to filmatize you. You had The Hypnotist was made to a movie, but that was quite some time ago, 10 years ago.
Something like that. Mm.
Yeah, so it didn't start the series. You kind of eyeing the sort of filmation rights, and could there be the bridge or the border town type of filmatization on the series? Is that something you interested in?
Yes, absolutely, we are. But unfortunately, we can't speak about exactly this because there are negotiations.
So Netflix and then the Amazon Prime are fighting for your rights as we speak.
Well,
we'll see what happens.
We can't tell. But
we'll see what happens. You know, we have been through this for so many years now. But of course, we can hope. But it's a totally different word.
We're writers. The film business. We understand books. We enjoy movies, but we stay out of the movie business. Mm. It's not.
Yeah, that's actually my specialty. I have written this for WSOY, this negotiation handbook, which has actually sold maybe something like 30,000 copies. But most of it, it's in a streaming format, and then most of my kind of audience comes from the either BookBeat or Storytel and Next Story. It's kind of interesting. It's not just the physical books, it's the voice, but then it could also be movies, and they are quite a different media. Is that affecting your writing? Are you writing more filmatic?
No.
No, we always try to write the book that we would love to read ourselves or listen to.
Mm. And that's it. But we never think about movies or audio readers, because we are writers. We must just follow our own stories and just make the best of it. If there's a movie, well, it's great, but you can't write a book thinking about a future movie.
We are writers of of books. Yeah. But I love that people are listening to books. I think it's the first way of reading in a way.
And I think our books has a filmic feeling. When you read them, it's like a movie almost in your head, at least for us.
Yeah, because we always want the readers to see the events, to feel like they're in the middle of everything that happens. That's we want to create this presence in the books.
Yeah, I think you've said before that you're very like visual writers, sort of, that you visualize everything that you write.
And
It's also very well conveyed in the books. Oh, it reminded me of another book that I read, maybe you're familiar with, All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. I think it won a Pulitzer Prize for fiction in 2015 or something. And I felt like both your books and then this book, they were very like film-like when I read it. It was very hard to set down the book and just had to keep reading.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Nordic noir, is it, I mean, in like, I'm an investment banker by day, but then I do this as a hobby, and it's quite a successful hobby to do a YouTube star, and I know pretty much everybody who does the same thing. But do you have a kind of a, you seem to be very familiar with Max Seck yesterday. You compared notes, and this is like a third interview. And he said he was in Germany and speaking Germany, and you were very friendly. Do you feel there's a kind of a bubble of Nordic noir authors? Are you fighting each other?
No. It's a community. Yeah. We enjoy each other, and we meet a lot in different countries and have a lot of fun. Respect each other.
And Henning has forgiven you, so.
Yeah. No, Henning is not here anymore.
No.
Sorry. I don't think he ever forgave us. I don't know. But it wasn't, we didn't spread the rumor.
No.
It was not
we
us.
We were totally innocent.
Yeah, maybe on the other person who died, Stieg Larsson. I'm not too, I don't like his reincarnation with the other writer. I mean, it doesn't feel right to have his characters sort of live after the author died, but you're still young, so you won't have that problem. But what's your view on the kind of the ghost writing, or you just write as a couple, but when others do it,
we don't have any opinions on that.
No.
But actually, we felt that the real Stieg Larsson, he was very important in the Swedish crime writing tradition, and that's actually why we have the name Lars, because it's a homage to him. He brought in a thriller element in his three books, and it was so sad that he died before he even saw his book being published. So that was very tragic. But I don't think we can have any opinion writes what.
It's a franchise now, and it's
But it's sometimes plastic-y.
It works.
Yeah, in my opinion.
We haven't read them, actually. We have just read the first one, the Stieg Larsson book.
I mean, I don't want anybody to spoil, but to give a bit of a highlight, so why the Finns should read Hämähäkki or the Spider here.
Well, it's exciting. It's
it's a really fast-paced thriller, but it also has a psychological depth. Like we always want to build real action around something deep inside of the characters.
Big heart too.
So it's actually a totally new kind of serial killer that that Jonah and Saga meets here. A serial killer that communicates and gives them the opportunity to save each victim. If they just solve a riddle before.
So it's a communicating serial killer, which is quite rare, but they do exist. You remember the Zodiac killer? He was like that. And, you know, blaming the police. If you don't solve the case, it's your fault this victim dies. So it's a way to, you know,
lift the blame from himself into the police.
Yeah.
And they have a really hard time here. When they start the hunt, they might soon realize that they might be the one that are hunted in a way.
Yeah, that's a common theme in many of your books, that the sort of it's circular.
The hunter becomes the hunted.
Yes.
To us it's it's the thriller in the book that the main characters that are trying to solve the mystery are drawn into it, and their lives are suddenly on stake.
That's why we write in present tense, because an ordinary police story is retelling a story. I will tell you about a case I had two years ago, and if you do that, you know that the policeman he survived. Yeah,
yeah.
But if you tell it in present tense, you don't know.
You are there at the same time as everything happens in a way.
Yeah, and then I have to you kind of hinted this is you conjure your own self, but then in one interview you said that it was a bit embarrassing with your children that the sex gets more and more kind of on the edge, and that's,
I don't know if it gets more and more.
But we write about sex too, of course. We write about whole characters, but I know what we said when they were started to read our books. We felt like, well, they are quite violent, but they, you know, they
the books, not the children.
No, so they watch a lot of movies, so they know about this, but the sex was a bit more embarrassing.
It was embarrassing as a parent.
You say, we have to say, this is not about mom and dad. It's it's the characters.
It's characters. Well, enough on this.
Yeah, and then the other aspect is 8 or 9 books. Your characters have grown up a lot, but you don't kind of feel them aging that much. A little bit saving. Yeah, you know, the children grow and so on.
Yeah.
But they're still having wild sex. So
wow. It's not just for 20 years.
Okay, yeah, I take that back. So you have a you. Eventually, they will grow old if you they keep
hopefully,
on going.
Hopefully, they.
They exist in kind of another Stockholm, but at the same time as we do. So, as we grow older for every day, they do too. But So
in our Stockholm, Lars Kepler exists as a writer, but not Jon and Saga for real. And in their Stockholm, Jon and Saga is for real, but Lars Kepler does not exist, of course.
True. Yeah.
Great. Axel, do you have a sort of a final notes on this?
I'm not familiar with the publishing world at all. It would be interesting to know, like, in what ways do writers make money from the books? Is it like, what are the main revenue streams? Is it from like physical books? Is it from the sort of audiobooks, or how does the model work? Do you usually sell? Is it common to sell the rights for a story for like a lump sum, or is it paid in royalties, or how does it work?
It's royalty based, but you have a grant.
Advance.
So you have an advance, and then when the royalties exceeds the
right,
you have more paid. But it's for one book. It's not different. So you don't have special royalties from audiobooks and so forth. It's the same.
You sell. We have an agent. And an agency that sells our books to the foreign countries.
Yeah.
And then we have our Swedish publishing house that we sign contracts with for each book, or for maybe 3 books ahead. And so I think your question was also which is more valuable.
Yes.
So the hard book, I think, is...
The hardcover is
the hardcover. Is what gives the writer a little bigger part from the selling. And audiobooks, it's different from publishing house to publishing house. It's still a little bit of a jungle, I think, so because it's such a new market.
Before it was the same because it was CDs, you know, you bought.
Right.
Yeah.
But now it's streamed, so people pay for a year in advance. So.
Yeah, it's I know the model myself as well, and that's also a negotiation aspect. You can negotiate the percentages on different media, and then you have to guess how much the, let's say, BookBeat allocates of the monthly streaming to your book, and then it's a bit of a guess.
guesswork.
Yeah, and and to us, we are not negotiators. We are so bad in that. We just want to write our books. Yeah. So we are very happy. We have a very good relationship with the people on in our publishing houses, and we just trust each other.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a Joona Linna character. He in for example this spider. He negotiates with the kebab owners and on the go speedy deal, and so this could be something that Joona develops over time. Negotiation skills.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's think that about that.
Do you actually take ideas from the audience or fans? If I, for example, pleaded you to write a character called Axel Gotthard, who gets gruesomely killed, would you entertain that?
No, I think it has to be very organic. It has to. We have to have this idea and feel that this idea is complex enough to build a whole story around.
But on the other hand, we collect ideas all the time. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So watch out.
Everything is research. Maybe you will find yourself in next book.
That would be an honor. Many thanks. I have had Lars Kepler, and they have been, discussed the spider and the other and Joona Linna. Series of books with us. And as you watch or listen to this far, please subscribe to the channel. Thank you.
Tusen tack.
Tusen tack.
Thank you.